Now, this is the first of a kind trip to Cuba, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We've been working in Cuba, or myself in particular, for over a decade, conducting marine research with the University of Havana, primarily on manatees. And so this is our opportunity to take people down who have an interest in research and conservation, actually be able to spend time with some of the Cuban scientists who are doing the work there, to experience Cuba in a way that going down on some of these other tours and trips, you wouldn't have a chance to do.
You're going to get out there and actually see how manatees are faring, see how bottlenose porpoises are doing?
It is to expose people to some of the issues and what some of the natural beauty is in Cuba, and to also be able to participate in some of the scientific research that's going on. And no, we're going to be going to some pretty remote areas. And the best way I've been trying to sum it up is for people to expect the unexpected for a whole bunch of reasons. We're not a bunch of tour guides.
Expect the unexpected. Sounds like you didn't have to do a hard sell to get people to go along with this trip.
We've had quite a few people jump on it, and it's very exciting. It's not only, you know, exciting for them, but it's exciting for us to be able to show people the work that we do, but also our Cuban colleagues as well, for them to have an opportunity to interact with people and the perspective that what is being done in Cuba has regional importance, particularly for us here in Florida, which is so nearby.
Now, you're considered a manatee expert, right? You grew up in Crystal River, where a lot of manatees congregate in the wintertime. What is the state of manatees in Cuba now compared to Florida? How are their populations doing? Do you know the numbers?
We don't really know. There has been very, very little work done on manatees up until when we started about a decade ago. And we started out talking to fishermen and those people that are familiar with the coastline. And then a few years later, I actually got all the permits to bring down some manatees that had died up here in Florida, some babies, took them to Cuba with all the permits, both sides, to train people how to do necropsies so that if manatees were found dead, they could determine, you know, what caused their deaths. So we've been sort of working our way around Cuba. That was the first phase. And then recently we've been doing satellite tagging and tagging manatees. But what we can't do, and this is certainly on our wish list, are aerial surveys. And you probably know here in Florida we have this annual count of manatees from small airplanes. Well, that's just proven to be an impossible task for now down there. And so we won't really get a good idea of what the population is doing. Right now it's anecdotal because we're having to talk to fishermen, unless we can go out and collect that type of direct data and information.
Now, the biggest threat to manatees in Florida are propellers, boats, all the propeller scars you see on manatees in hospitals. I would imagine that there are fewer motorboats down there just because of the economy. Would they face fewer threats?
Yeah. You know, if you stretch Cuba end to end, if you stretched it out, it'd stretch from Florida to Maine. And most of that coastline is fabulous manatee habitat. In Columbus, when he first came to Cuba, there are reports in his log of swarms of manatees. So at one time, there were very high populations. But since then, they've been hunted down. And they're still hunted in Cuba to an extent. They're also drowned in fishing nets and trawls. And we find these carcasses on a fairly regular basis. And we also know that when we're out looking for them, they're very frightened when a boat comes across them, unlike, you know, manatees here in Florida. And that's probably because of the hunting pressure. And it's interesting, your comment about boat scars. Yeah, they're not killed by boats down there. If it happens, it's rare. And I was telling my student, Amory Alvarez, I said, if you ever see a manatee with boat scars, the likelihood that it got scarred in Cuba as compared to a Florida manatee that swam to Cuba, I think I'll place my bets on the manatee that swam from Florida. So I was down in Cuba, and we got a report of a manatee and a baby near a power plant. So she went out and took photographs of it and brought the photographs back. And I was looking at the photographs, and it had boat scars, obvious boat scars. And I said, this manatee's been hit by boat. Not only that, I know this manatee. And she goes, you're crazy. And I go, no, I really think I know who this is. So I brought the photographs back, and in Florida, at USGS in Gainesville, they have a computer catalog, and we've been keeping this catalog for a long, long time. So we ran the photographs through the catalog, and sure enough, we got a very positive match of a female that I had photographed in Crystal River in 1979. And it had been seen every year up until the summer of 2006, when it was seen with a baby up in the Wakulla River, and then it never came back to Crystal River, but that's because it went on a winter vacation in Cuba. And it was seen for a month or so, and we don't really know what happened to it. But that's the first evidence of a Florida manatee crossing the straits to Cuba.
I had no idea they could swim 90 miles. They don't look like they're capable of that, because just the way they're built, right?
You know, up until fairly recently, we thought they were very much a coastal, stayed close to the coastline. But Florida manatees are now showing up in the Bahamas. We had this one that we know that showed up in Cuba. We have a project in Belize where we satellite tag manatees, and where manatees are swimming across oceanic water out to Turnef, a coral atoll, and how they can navigate out there and so forth, we don't have a clue.
Now, manatees have kind of evolved here in the public mindset as something cute and cuddly, something you want to protect. It's on, you know, billboards, city symbols, that sort of thing. What's the mindset of the Cuban populace towards manatees? Do they think them more as a source of steaks than something that is to be cuddled?
Yeah, that's true almost everywhere we find manatees, until they begin to benefit from them economically to a large extent, or the country is affluent enough. And yeah, you were always faced with, this is a big hunk of red meat to a lot of people, particularly fishermen. That I found the same thing when I was working in Africa. And to use Belize as an example, they were hunted extensively in Belize, but now they've become almost as iconic in Belize because there's tourists going out and swimming with them, and there's a tourism industry that's developing around going out and viewing manatees. And so that has shifted. It's rare that manatees are hunted there. So the same sort of thing is, we're working on that with our Cuban colleagues to develop that same sort of sense in Cuba as well. And the Cuban government, they are protected in Cuba, are very supportive, because it is one of only two endemic marine mammals, that particular species, or native marine mammals in Cuba, the bottlenose dolphin, and also manatees that are restricted to that island. And so without large types of wildlife and so forth, it's something that they can identify.
The tourism you were just referring to, I assume, mainly refers to European tourists. With the prospect of the island being opened to U.S. tourists, who, you know, Florida's 90 miles away, do you foresee the possibility that tourism to that island could increase the knowledge of the value of conservation in any way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because a lot of the tourism that's going on now, and like you say, it's primarily European and Canadian, are coming for the natural beauty of Cuba. I mean, the reefs are pristine, the beaches are in many, many areas. And so, you know, a lot of tourists are not just happy to lay out on the beach. They want something to do. They want something to see. And something as unusual and unique as manatees, particularly if you can find them in crystal clear water, is something that's very appealing to tourists. And I think as more and more people visit, and the fact that there are manatees there and guides can take them out to see them, I think, yes, they'll begin to see that value, that type of value to the species, and then more will be done to try and protect them.
On the other hand, there's the possibility of an onrush of Yankee tourists coming down there, huge resorts being built in otherwise pristine coastlines. Do you fear maybe there will be a negative impact on the environment there because of all that overuse that might happen once relations are finally normalized between the two countries?
Yeah, you know, growing up in Florida and seeing the changes in Florida, you know, firsthand, and then going down to Cuba and seeing what Cuba was like, you know, when I was a kid, or, you know, my dad's time in the 50s and early 60s. Yeah, no doubt that there's going to be increased pressure to develop these coastlines, build causeways to barrier islands and so forth. Same deal as we have in Florida. And so they're going to have to be very cautious in managing that type of development, because otherwise you kill the goose that laid the golden egg, and those areas that were once gin clear begin to become tarnished, and then they will become just like many, many other islands in the Caribbean and lose that edge that they have now, which is this reputation of being very pristine.
So I'd imagine that part of your message is not just aimed at Americans who go down there to visit this rare and until now isolated country. It sounds like you're also aiming at the Cuban populace to become aware of the possibilities for preserving species such as the manatees and the dolphins and preserving their ecology to be part of their own interest.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, one of the things about a marine environment is people who live close to it are dependent upon it. They're dependent upon it for food, dependent upon it for, you know, recreation and water, that rivers that flow into it. And so protecting it, not only for, you know, the tourism development, perhaps, and the local economy, is also going to be very, very important for their own health. And that's one of the things that we talk about. If you're trying to protect manatees, you're trying to protect their habitat, which is coastal habitat, inshore habitat, rivers and estuaries and bays. And so if you protect manatee habitat, you're protecting the productivity and the health of these areas, which is in very close proximity to where people live and are dependent upon it. And so it is very much all intermingled together.
It sounds like you're very excited about this trip, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I am. It's going to be very interesting and educational and exciting in a whole bunch of different ways.
Thank you very much for your help, Dr. Powell.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you.